When we started writing our thoughts down on paper, it opened up endless possibilities. Ideas could grow beyond the borders of the mind, and it changed the world. Somewhere along the way, we lost touch with paper, distracted by devices made for every purpose except for thinking and focus. On edge, waiting for the next notification. But what if new technology didn't pull us away from paper, but brought us closer to it? Listen. That's not paper. It's the sound of the new Remarkable Paper Pro, rewriting the future. A paper tablet with a true color ink display, gentle reading light, and unheard of tactility. With digital features for taking notes, thinking, and organizing, without any distractions. Paper is about to change the world again. Get your paper tablet at remarkable.com today.
Hey everyone, Yas here, and I just wanted to say it's great to have you join me today because I'm sure we're going to have another fantastic episode. So whether you're here for the first time or if you're one of the repeat loyal listeners of the show, I truly appreciate you. But before we get to today's guest, I just have a small favor to ask, and that's if you could just take a brief moment to hit the subscribe button if you haven't already. Ensure that you share it with all your coaching friends, and don't forget to get in touch, guys. Let me know your thoughts on what you think of today's episode or any of the recent episodes you've listened to. You can do this on Twitter at The Coaches Net. Once again, that's at The Coaches Net. And please make sure you do, as I'd love to hear your thoughts, guys. Anyway, on to today's show. I hope you enjoy it. Have a great day, guys.
The Coaches Network.
Hey, guys. You're now listening to The Coaches Network podcast, a podcast aimed at anyone who's passionate about athlete, talent, and personal development. My name's Coach Yas, and I'm a UEFA A-licensed football coach developer, and content creator. I'll be sitting down with a range of guests to discuss their journeys, their life lessons, and how you can make an impact. Enjoy. Right, guys, welcome back to the Coaches Network. My name's Coach Yas, and I've got a very special guest with me today. My guest today is Jamie Byrne. Morning, Jamie. How are you doing?
Hi, guys. Yeah, I'm doing really well, thank you. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. I'm really looking forward to this one. Jamie, obviously, we've had the opportunity to meet before, but for those that don't know who you are, maybe a bit of a background around who you are and what you do.
Yeah, of course. So I'm currently 23. I'm just in the process of finishing my master's in applied performance analysis. I've got my undergrad degree, first class honours in sport and exercise science, and the dream is to be a performance analyst in the world of football. I'm so lucky to say that I've already worked with some brilliant football clubs. So I've worked with Birmingham City Women's in their academy. I've just finished a placement with Crystal Palace Football Club, and I'm currently working remotely for a club called AAFP in Colombia. So that's a little bit about me currently.
Amazing. So a short but insightful journey so far, I'm sure. Part of the reason obviously I wanted to connect with you on the podcast is because obviously the discussion we had the other day was around some of the research that you've been doing and some of your thoughts. But before we dive into anything related to that, maybe just talk to us a little bit around what you consider the role of the analyst to be, because I think it's something that is not necessarily new in sport, especially not in the world of football and elite sport is on that end of the spectrum, but there is definitely different ways in which it has been perceived and what maybe the traditional approach to what performance analysis might be. Maybe just a bit of insight around what your perception of that is.
I definitely think everyone has a different definition of like what the role of a performance analyst is. Obviously what it will be for me will be completely different to someone else, but for me it's all about just the ability to help develop and give an insight into both technical and tactical ability in football. Obviously I definitely say it's more of a tactical stance, especially from the stuff that I've been doing, any way to help elevate the game on the pitch. But as well as a lot of individual analysis, I think that's highly important, because at the end of the day, we would love to be able to get the whole team into a first team situation. But unfortunately, that's just not possible with the nature of the sport. So really using analysis to hone in on individuals, both their strengths and their areas of improvement, I think is just highly important. And I feel like something that I've been able to start doing. On the flip side of things, I think there's a whole like different side to analysis. So looking at it from a coaching standpoint, so we need to look at how we can develop coaches through like a coach analyst kind of thing, to make sure that we have the highest level of coaching to ensure that we can develop the players to their highest potential. Because at the end of the day, without the players, we don't have a job. That's from me as an analyst, to coaches, to nutritionists, to sports scientists. Everyone involved in the system, the most important part and the key focus is the players. So with my role, doing anything I can to ensure that they are being developed, both pushing myself and the team, that to me is the most important part of the analysis. And like I said, there's so many routes you can go down, and everyone's going to have their own opinion, but that's just mine.
I love that. So let's look at that a little bit then, because, you know, it's traditional, the analyst is often seen as someone who just puts some clips together. You know, if we're looking at it, strip it right back. Sometimes it gets considered, sometimes it doesn't get considered. From your perception as an analyst and your experiences, what are some of the challenges that exist in terms of trying to get maybe the buy-in from the coaching staff in particular around what it is that you're providing them with as insight? And then linked to that, you know, we're seeing a lot of new technology that's come out over recent years, whether that be from VOs or whatever that might be, that actually now makes this aspect of player development more accessible for people outside of the elite environments. What are your thoughts on that?
Definitely buying with coaches. It's definitely something that I've seen improve just over the two seasons that I've actually been involved in football. Especially it's being very different from going from a women's side of things to a men's. Obviously the women haven't got as much funding. So I feel like, because obviously that role when I was at Birmingham City was a volunteer basis as a placement during my undergrad degree. So having them there buy into things was absolutely huge, because it's something they'd never really had before. So they were really involved and wanting as much as I could give them. So that was absolutely fantastic. And the coach kind of let me do my own thing. He was like, this is what I want to look at. He said, however you want to present it, show it, your data, your stats, do whatever you kind of want. So that was a little bit daunting for me coming to my first role in the industry. But I think it gave me the confidence to then go into a Cat One club, into Crystal Palace, into a huge different environment, obviously in a men's side of things. I mean, don't get me wrong, the coaches were absolutely fantastic there. I've got no bad word to say about any of them. Obviously it was a different dynamic to go into, but their intake and perception of analysis was brilliant, and they did take everything on board. Obviously it was throughout my time in the season that I was able to grow my confidence further, and then I ended up kind of speaking my mind a bit more and getting more of my opinion and my analysis ability through, because obviously just being there longer, I gained more experience and obviously, like I said, growing confidence. I think if you asked me this question probably about 5-10 years ago, it would be slightly different, because in my opinion, coaches used to be a little bit more rigid on that side of things, because at the end of the day, it is kind of the coaches. It's their team, it's the way they want to do it. But I think they're now understanding the importance of analysis and how much it can benefit both them, their tactical ability, and how they want to lead the team. So I definitely think that's something that's definitely improved. And I think if you bring your confidence and bring it up with the stats side of things, then it's easy for a coach to kind of buy into everything. At Palace, for example, like, I was extremely lucky. I went into an environment that had pretty much everything you can think of when it came to analysis side of things. Obviously, we had brilliant cameras. We had something called a B Pro, which we were lucky enough that we just sent them the game and they gave us data. So obviously, me being an analyst, that saved me hours of work, because I was just given data. And then obviously, I was able to use the data to explain different things about individuals, find clips easier. We had a library of things, and it just made my day-to-day or my week-to-week at the club a lot easier. It's definitely something that can be accessed at lower level, but obviously it is more of like a funding thing when you're looking at something like the B Pro. But with my work at the club in Colombia, we use purely just a VO, and then I just use a studio software that I have access to. I use that to do my analysis side of things, but the VO side of things, you can clip and cut on there. So for lower level clubs, they've got easy access to things like that. So it's definitely something that is becoming more accessible. So hopefully as time goes on, people are going to be able to afford more things such as the B Pro, or there's going to be more budget friendly options, more like the VO, and hopefully more softwares to make the coding and the analyst side a little bit easier.
No, definitely. I think it's really good to kind of understand how the different aspects of what your, you know, how your role is impacted in that respect. But, you know, if we take it to the coach now themselves, obviously, you know, you're looking at from an analyst's perspective, these are all the different things that you probably can dive into. Obviously, having data points is really important, and having footage and all the other stuff that goes with it. If there's a coach thinking, you know what, I really want to start the analysis, I really want to get involved in the analysis and support my players in that respect, where would be a good place, if from your perspective, for them to start by analysing? Like, what would be a good starting point? Because the reality is, there's so many things that you can maybe dive into in terms of analysis. You talked about maybe potentially tactical things. You talked about maybe individual things. It could be developing on strengths. It could be developing areas for improvement, like you mentioned. Where would be a good place for a coach to kind of think about starting if they want to just begin implementing some sort of analysis within their environment?
I honestly think there's so many areas that you can go into, as you've literally just mentioned just now. I definitely think you want to focus on team things to start with. Obviously, in training, focus on the individual little things. If it's more, say, simple pattern-based things, obviously keep that in training. But when it comes to analysis, start with team stuff. So simple stuff as, well, how many times do we get into the final third? How many times do we get a cross in or an attempt on goal? Because at the end of the day, the only stat that actually matters in football is the end result. Because no matter, you could have 20 shots on target, but if it's not a goal, then it doesn't really matter at the end of the day. So I definitely focus on team things, and then obviously look at the attacking side of things. Look at, well, how quickly do we regain the ball after losing possession, and counter-attack side of things. Obviously, like I said, anything to do with the final third. Looking at the percentages, well, we get into the final third 20 times. Oh, but how many times does that result in a shot? How many times do those shots result in goals? So simple things like that. Then obviously you want to look on the flip side defensively, because obviously you don't want to leave anyone out on the team. See what does it look like, and what's the matchup between defenders and then attackers after a counter attack and things like that. That's definitely something to consider. If you were to look at any individual, if you're looking at team based things, I would possibly focus on the goalkeeper. They do tend to be neglected a little bit from what I've found from doing some research and things like that. Obviously we never want to neglect anyone on the team, but I just feel like they are underprivileged with analysis side of things. That's something that when I was working at Palace, I sat down with the goalkeeping coaches at least once a week and made sure that they had some form of focus, because in analysis sessions they didn't really get anything. So that's something that I've implemented, and I'm hoping that they have been carrying on. But yeah, so team stats and anything on the goalkeeper, just little things like their saves and stuff like that.
So then, okay, so you know, one of the things that obviously just attracted me to having a conversation with you on the podcast in particular, we had a conversation around some of your findings, some of your approaches to some of your thoughts around practice and type of practice that you should be utilizing. I've been working in coaching for the last maybe 16 years, and currently working as a coach developer now. And one of the things I often talk about is I not my dislike necessarily, but my preference to avoid unopposed type of practice. My preference to avoid practice that doesn't have context. Because fundamentally, if we're looking at trying to develop players, linking it back to what you said earlier, well, you're not going to produce a whole team of players, but you can produce individuals. And those individuals are likely to get through, not because they've got great technique, but because they can actually be effective in decision-making appropriate moments, right? So how do we get better at doing that? And fundamentally, there needs to be context. So I'm of the view that if we're going to do justice to the players and help them develop the decision-making capabilities, there needs to be a lot of context to the practice. There needs to be an emphasis and a focus on, right, what are the variables that they need to consider to make effective decisions? And if those variables aren't present in sessions, then they're probably not developing the decision-making capabilities as effectively as they probably could be. However, that's not to kind of disregard the purpose and the place that maybe on a post practice that lacks context might offer and might support players with. What are your thoughts on that to start off with? And yeah, we'll go from there.
So I'm heavily on the thought process that we need to take out what obviously unopposed or what I class as pattern-based training, especially if you're in some form of high level academy, because to get to there you should have a very good understanding of the basics, which I feel like is something that pattern-based drills and learning brings in to things, because it's unopposed, so you haven't got any necessarily cognitive challenge. It's stuff like passing, headering, shooting, well, the goal doesn't move, and things like that. So it's definitely something that is still needed, because you need to top things up and keep it oiling, keep it running, just to make sure that you're on top of things. But when you're looking at a training session, I don't believe that you should just do pattern based, because being a footballer is more just about it's more than just being I can kick a ball, I can score a goal, because you need to get into the situations that you can problem solve and you can go, actually, yes, I could make this or I could do this, but actually, is there a better solution? So I definitely feel like scenario-based training is the way forward. I've done a lot of research on it as part of my master's, and I'm a firm believer it needs to go down more of the route of, it's something called constructive learning theories. So this is looking at different zones of optimal learning, and it's where you're if you think of like a target, so the middle one is stuff that you just can't do. You even with help, you just won't be able to do it. The outer ring stuff you can do really, really easily. Like, you can pass the ball, you don't need any help or guidance in it. So it's kind of like that middle ring that we've really got to focus on. And this is what's known as the zone of proximal development, which is where you can kind of do something, but you just need that little bit of help. And then that's where the players are going to learn both cognitively and physically, and help them tactically and technically. And that's something that I really feel like using scenario-based training helps to progress and do.
It's really important, because I think I think you'd agree with me. I think there's definitely value in some of the pattern-based stuff. But on a grand scheme, if we're trying to develop players to play at, like you said, at a higher level in particular, they probably need to be good at providing themselves or finding solutions to the problems they're faced with in game. And if they're not getting experience of the problems, how are they going to start developing the solutions essentially? But I guess one of the things that I've recently, you know, been speaking to a lot of coaches about is the idea that is it really that the scenario-based stuff is the way forward, or is it actually because of how society's changed that we've seen this shift take place? So as an example, you mentioned you're 23, I'm 34, and when I was growing up, we used to play out on the streets, and it was a regular thing, which might be probably in and around your age, probably around the cusp of where I would say maybe things started to shift a little bit, right, where you start, especially in London where I've grown up, you probably didn't see as much kids, maybe from your generation, at least from my observations, playing out on the streets as much as we did when I was younger. So then, you know, I mentioned that to say, is there a case to say that actually because we had more free play in our childhood, in my generation, that informed potentially what coaching would look like in the environments where there's coaches? So as an example, you're getting these kids who've got so much free play, so that when they come into the coached environment, we're going to do a lot of technical-based stuff. We're going to do a lot of pattern-based stuff so that they can refine the technique that they haven't had to necessarily do away from here. But in today's generation or today's society, you don't see kids playing out anymore. And if they do, it's in very structured and organised settings where it's not on the street. It's probably at the local grassroots, it's at the local five-a-side cages or whatever it might be. But because they don't get that at the same element and in volume of free play that maybe someone from my generation might have had, that there's a larger emphasis on now, let's just let them play games, if that makes sense. And there's less emphasis on the technical side of things, which I think has then had a knock-on effect in how coaching is now delivered now, or what the emphasis on coaching actually is. But also there's caused this debate on what value and appreciation should be placed on either that more technical based, pattern based stuff that you've talked about there versus what might be more scenario based, game related elements on this side of the equation, if that makes sense. I don't know if anything what I've just said made sense, but hopefully it did. You can offer me your...
No, it did for sure. I about to say, I remember when I was younger, like when I was about 9, 10, 11, when you were still at primary school, Tushel, the lads would knock at the door, I'd go out, we'd go to the local park, we'd play football. I definitely feel like that's something that doesn't happen anymore. It might just be because I don't see it because I'm not 10 anymore. But definitely with like the whole... people are getting phones at the age of like 7 years old, which I think is crazy. Obviously, their minds are taken elsewhere, or they're on the PS5 and things like that, or the Xbox. I feel like that's taken things away. And I feel like that's where you might need to do more like constructive theory learning, just because obviously it's said that cognitive ability can like deplete from things like that. I definitely feel like lads and all players, they still are getting a lot of sport, especially if you're interested in sport, whether you just play football or you play multiple sports, like at schools and things like that. Obviously they've got their PE lessons, they've got after school clubs, some still do go out on the weekends and play around with their friends and have a kick about, but I just don't think it's as ingrained as when I was younger, and then yourself as well. So I definitely feel like that would have had an impact on coaching, but I think it depends on the age of the coach and what they experienced when they were younger. Because for me, I feel like sometimes having it's a form of scenario-based learning, it's called the teaching games for understanding. So that's literally pretty much where you put them in a game situation and you let the game be the teacher. Obviously if you're doing that more outside, having a kick about with your friends, you're kind of doing that yourself. But obviously, if they're not doing that as much anymore, then that's something we need to bring into coaching a little bit more than the pattern based things. It definitely could be something when scenario based training can be more from like a younger age than higher ages, purely off the back of the older you get, I'm hoping you've got a better cognitive understanding and a problem solving understanding. So it's definitely something that I'd consider more from a younger age, even as low as like foundation phase, so looking at your under 10s, your under 11s. But I think it just depends on the coach, and it really depends on what the team needs. But then, like I said, if you're in some Cat 1 academy or a Cat 2 academy, I would expect more scenario based training, because like I said, pattern base is to for me to refine and perfect skills. And if you're at that high level already for your age, you should already have those skills nailed down to be able to explore different things such as scenario-based training and the things that you would do in that situation.
Sure. So it's interesting because you mentioned there about teaching games for understanding, and you use that phrase, let, you know, let the game be the teacher. You think that's really possible?
I definitely think so. There's been, I remember I was talking to a coach once, and we were having a huge discussion about and how we develop and deliver analysis to academy players. So obviously I was looking at more under 13s level, and he was adamant, you don't need movement slides. I think what we should do, obviously they play 4 20-minute quarters. He said the first 20 minutes, the coach should say nothing and you should just let the game happen and see what the players do. Even if you end up going 4-5-0 down, see what the players do and see if they can figure out what's going wrong, or have what you taught them in that week in training, are they able to express that on the pitch? Are they able to stay calm?
Just to pause you for 2 seconds, is that what you would consider allowing them to let the game be the teacher in terms of just letting them explore?
Yeah, I think so. I think there's so many variations of it. This is just one of them. I think this is... because we all looked at him when he said this, and I was like, I think you're mad. I think you're absolutely mad. Especially because, obviously, in an academy setting, even though a lot of people say results don't matter, because obviously they're developing, well, they do at the end of the day. Obviously, it's different for every setting, but this one specifically. And I was like, well, what if you go 4-0 down and all of this and all like that? But then that's when he was like, well, second, third and fourth quarter, that's where the coach jumps in. And helps them develop and go, this happened, what, why do you think this, and asking the right questions, probing questions, so it's like very player led. So it's definitely something that can teach them. Obviously that's looking more of like an actual game based, but I definitely feel like it will be a more shock to the system if you did it more like that, if they haven't had more scenario-based training, because they're going, oh my God, what's going on? We don't really have any leadership. But obviously throughout training, hopefully you'll see who your like stronger, more dominant players are. Hopefully they're going to step into the roles as well as your captain and things like that. But I definitely feel like just letting any form of scenario-based training, or to be fair, any training really, just letting it play out, letting it keep rolling until, say, a mistake that maybe made 3 or 4 times before you intervene, whether that's a drive-by, as in jumping in, just talking to the individual, just pulling them aside while letting it carry on, or it's a moment that's worth opening up to everyone and going, right, pause here, guys, let's just replay what's happened. Mm-hmm. What do you think this? What do you think that? But I definitely think teaching games for understanding is something that's very player led, and I think it's something that needs to be done more, because I feel like some players can be a bit coddled more than others, and I think that can have a negative impact on both their footballing development and their development for themselves as well.
Yeah, I think it's a really good point. I think so I was delivering a CPD yesterday. I had a coach ask me the question literally around that phrase, let the game be the teacher, and I said, I don't believe it can, personally, because I think fundamentally what it does is if you allow the game to be the teacher, then I think you throw into question the role of the coach. I think for me, the game will present things for you, but I think framing it through the lens of let the game be the teacher can almost create a situation where the coach becomes redundant. And I think certainly in the concept of, you know, player development, I don't think there's ever a situation where the players can just learn. I think they have to go through experience and they have to reflect on experience. So let the game be the teacher, yes, from a standpoint of providing you the context to explore. But fundamentally, that context will only be explored upon prompted feedback or reflection, in which case the coach plays a role in that process, right? So I think it's almost, for me, it's a bit of a dangerous phrase, because I think it allows coaches to get away with the idea of, oh, we're just going to let the game teach the players. Yeah, but the game won't teach the players unless the games are the right games for the players to understand that these are the problems. But in order for them to understand these are the problems, there needs to be a dialogue, whether that's a dialogue with themselves or whether that's a dialogue between them and the coach to identify, right, Jamie, you've just experienced that. What are you seeing, as an example? So fundamentally, something needs to be a catalyst there for that problem to be identified before then you can come up with the solutions, if you like. I don't know what your thoughts are on that.
No, so I obviously still stand by what I said, but it's not a case of when you've got like a scenario based training of a game. It's not like you go, guys, here's a ball, go play football.
And that's the danger, right? Because I think that's what some coaches interpret it as.
Oh yeah, no, definitely. Obviously, it is very ambiguous, and obviously, what you say, pretty much in any form, whether it's a football form or daily conversation, people are going to misconstrued what you say. So see, I definitely wouldn't say as a here's a football, go play, see what happens. No, there's definitely got to be some form of structure involved in it. But I think from my point of view, it's more giving them the space to learn on their own. Right. Obviously, you've still given them like directions. So say, for example, you're looking at making sure we play through the middle. So I don't know, putting two cones, if you play through the gate, you get an extra 2 points or something like that. So obviously you set that, but then you let them go and play. So I think it's you still give some form of objective or structure, but the whole actual learning process, they're teaching themselves within the game. But obviously this is where I said you'll have your drive-by interventions and jumping in with an individual and saying, oh, well, maybe try this or maybe do this. So you're still teaching them, but I think it's still got to be heavily player-led, especially if you need to help them develop that cognitive side of things and that ability to problem solve, because I find, well, I found that watching a lot of young YDP games, that a lot of them have got solutions but not to the right situations, or they can arrive at a situation, get there amazingly, but then they don't actually know what to do once they're in the situation. And I think you can teach them that, on how to deal with a situation, but you need to teach them how to just kind of arrive and go, okay, I can actually do this. It's not always going to be this or this. It's not always A and B. There could be A, B, C, D, E, and they'll have the ability to figure out which one's the right one, not going, right, I've got to the edge of the 18-yard box, I'm going to shoot, or anything like that. They've got the cognitive understanding to go, let's try this, because you've given them the ability to learn in your structured setting in their own space, if that makes sense. Yeah. So I think it's checking in with what people's definitions of let the game be the teacher, and then having that conversation of, hold on, well, your job's now not, what's the point of you being there? So it's definitely one of those you need to communicate with. But then going off the bat of when you've got a training session, you want a mixture of, you want overload, you want unopposed, you want scenario based. I'm just heavily off the base of, you should have more scenario based training throughout the session. You say 60% of it, more than anything else.
So let's explore that further then. So obviously one of the things you talked about there, in essence, and this is the way I perceived anyway, is you're talking about helping players understand the situation they're in, but becoming adaptable in terms of the solutions that they decide to apply within those moments, right? So here's the situation, but how have you seen it versus how have I seen it? Based on our capabilities, based on the opponents in front of us. So if you were supporting coaches now, thinking about, right, how do we start to develop that type of environment? Where would you start with that? Because one of the things I often talk about is, right, here's a moment of the game, but the moment is just an image until we understand the role that we play in that moment and the perception we have of it. And obviously one of the challenges that can often arise for coaches is we look at it from the outside in, we're not looking at it from the inside out, right? And I often use the phrase, you know, if as a coach, you've got to be very careful that you're not observing the game through your eyes, but you're trying to observe it through their experiences. So how I perceive the moment, me and you could be in the exact same situation looking at the exact same thing, but perceive it completely differently because, I don't know, you might be left-footed, I might be right-footed, and we might be going down the left-hand side of the pitch. That's going to affect how I perceive the possibilities of what can happen in this moment. So I guess linking it to that, what will be some starting points that you'd suggest coaches start exploring, right, how to really support players in becoming more effective at identifying these problems, but more importantly, how to better consider what influences their ability to even consider this as a problem, if that makes sense.
I think the most important thing to do is ask a question first. Don't dive in and be like, why did you do that? Don't open, obviously I know that's a question, but don't ask a question that sounds like a telling off or anything like that. It's like, well, why'd you do that for? Da, 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 da. Don't go in all guns blazing. Just like, obviously take a minute and just go, so what do you think about what's just happened? And kind of ask really open-ended questions in regards to that, instead of being quite harsh and critical on it. Because just because what you see, well, you're looking from the side of the pitch, but what about the other side? There's two completely different viewpoints, because what I see looking through my laptop from a high vantage camera is different to what a coach sees, is different to what the player sees, like you were saying, different perspectives. So I think it's a case of, right, pulling up and going, you saw this situation, what do you remember about the situation? Why did you do that? I think it's definitely the tone of the conversation, tone of the way you do it.
Yeah.
And like, what's your thought process? Is like, it wasn't necessarily successful, but why wasn't it successful? And asking those questions to understand where they're coming from, and not just going, well, in training we did this, why didn't you do this, or things like that. So it's definitely the main thing is seeing where the player comes from. And then I think definitely if it's been a bad game, say you've lost 7-0, for example, taking a step back and then waiting for some analysis to be done, I think. Because I remember I did one game and I wasn't at the game, and the coach messaged me. He was like, that was such an awful game. He was like, we were this, we were that, we were this, we were that. And I was like, okay. So obviously I went into the game with a little bit of a negative mindset going like, oh God, the lads were awful. I was watching the game back and I was like, they haven't actually played that badly. It was like, there was one or two moments, but I think it's the thing of, that's why coaches need analysts, because you only remember key points, whether it's either really positive or really negative, or they don't remember. I think it's like, they don't remember like 58% or 68% of what actually happens. So definitely taking a step back from the situation is a huge, huge thing. But the main thing is coming from, you want to understand the player's thought process before you go all guns blazing and go, well, that was wrong.
Yeah, no, I think you're spot on, because, you know, again, delivering a CPD yesterday, and one of the things that I did personally at the start of the session when I'm delivering to the players is I literally set the scene and said, look, I'm going to ask you loads of questions today, but they're not going to be questions to catch you out. They're going to be questions just for me to understand what you think and see. Because if I understand what you think and see, then I can probably offer you some better support. But also equally allows me to say, actually, do you know what? You don't need my support right now. You've seen something and that's cool. It might not be what I would have wanted or done, but that's fine. But I think you're spot on. I think it's starting to understand and asking really those really open-ended questions. And I actually don't think it is a bad question to say, well, why did you do that? but I think it's getting them comfortable to understand that's not a bad question. I'm just curious, why did you do that? What did you see? Like, what did you notice that allowed you, that made you feel like that was the right thing to do, right? And I think within that, it's also, like you said, it's that, it's providing the support. And it might be through individual coaching interventions, drive-bys and all that type of stuff. But I think one of the challenges that can come with that approach is when you're really trying to support the players in their understanding. And I don't know if you've experienced this or observed this yourself as an analyst, but that line of questioning and that interaction can actually be quite an extended one at times. So now you're eating into the time, which goes against what a lot of people say is, well, we need the ball to be rolling. So, you know, from your perspective as an analyst, how does a coach better package that information to make sure they're getting their point across, but also maybe utilizing other means to get that message across?
Definitely one thing that I've seen from doing some brief like coach analysis is ball rolling time. Obviously I think majority of it has been like 70-80% of ball rolling time, which I think,
when we started writing our thoughts down on paper, it opened up endless possibilities. Ideas could grow beyond the borders of the mind, and it changed the world. Somewhere along the way, we lost touch with paper, distracted by devices made for every purpose except for thinking and focus, on edge waiting for the next notification. But what if new technology didn't pull us away from paper, but brought us closer to it? Listen. That's not paper. It's the sound of the new Remarkable Paper Pro, rewriting the future. A paper tablet with a true color ink display, gentle reading light, and unheard of tactility. With digital features for taking notes, thinking, and organizing, without any distractions. Paper is about to change the world again. Get your paper tablet at Remarkable.com today.
When your company earns unlimited 2% cash back on all purchases with Capital One, that's serious business. So Steven at SandCloud got a serious business card, the Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One.
We used our 2% cash back to help build our retail presence.
Savvy, Steven.
And we get big purchasing power, so our business can spend more and earn more.
The Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One. What's in your wallet?
Terms and conditions apply. Find out more at CapitalOne.com/SparkCashPlus.
Right, like, you see, you can get a point across, but if they're not on the ball necessarily, I don't think it can stick, because obviously I know majority of learners learn through actually doing something instead of sitting down and just reading something on the board. Obviously I know it's different for every club, but for example, my time at Palace will have an analysis session, and then we'll always have the session plan at the end of it. So we'll explain to the boys before we even go out, we'll ask if they've got any questions. So we've got that basic foundation of what we're doing that day before we even go into our ball rolling time. So before the boys have even got the boots on and got onto the pitch. So I definitely feel like that's something that if you have the facilities and you have the time to do that, brilliant. If even if it's a grassroots thing, maybe can you put the session plan in the family group chat or the football group chat to just go, we're going to be doing this today, if you wanted to know, just so they've got the ability to see that before they even come in. Obviously I know that will then help you find out who's serious, who's there for fun and things like that on that side of things, because if you haven't read it, you don't care that much. Or if you have, like, you're really eager to learn. I definitely think that's something in it. I think there becomes a point where you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make it drink. So in the case of you can give the players all the resources, all your time, but it's whether they utilize it or not. So I think it's a case of you want to deliver this message. You've delivered it in the correct amount of time, so you've still got the ball rolling. But if a player's still confused afterwards or things like that, I think this is where we've got to give them ownership to their own learning, their own understanding, for them to go, I know I didn't speak up, or I actually need to ask for more help. Because we've had players come in, they're like, can I just have a one-to-one session with you just to go over this? Or can I, I've done this for analysis side of things, can you just sit down with me and go through this? So I think there comes a point where you can give them everything, but it's whether they want to utilize it more than I'm going to stand here for the next 20 minutes and go, this is that, if that makes sense.
100%. I think there's something really important what you said there, is that it's obviously, you know, you want to give them the ownership to make that step themselves and take that step themselves. But I think one of the things that I talk about a lot in coaching, in that it doesn't really matter, even away from coaching, just in life, right? Like, there'll be certain things that you're just locked in on. But you're locked in on them because you understand the relevance of it to you. So as an example, like, you know, if I said to you, like, Jamie, there's a performance analysis conference taking place today, I probably wouldn't have to convince you that much that you're going to, you know, for you to have to go. You're probably just going to go because before you've even stepped foot in the environment, just the context of what you know about and the perception of it, you've already attached the relevance to it, right? So I don't have to sell the idea to you, but I think that's what it is with players sometimes. And especially, I think it's interesting because I'm generalizing, of course, a little bit, but I think with male players in particular, majority of the ones that I've come across, they kind of think they already know it. So I think a part of the challenge in that is, do they buy into it? Do they take the ownership? Do they see the benefit in the value in the information and the tools and the guidance that you provided for them? Well, I think conceptually they'll understand it, but in actual reality they probably won't value it until they recognize its relevance to them, right? And I think that's where the coach and even the analyst, I guess, to an extent, or anyone involved in player development needs to really take I've got to be careful how I put this. It's not to say that it's their fault, but they've got to take more responsibility and more accountability over the fact that actually, if the players aren't seeing the value in this, okay, you can argue and say the players have got a lack of ownership, or they're not taking enough responsibility of their own development, but has enough been done to prevent them from feeling like this isn't of value to me? Even though conceptually they'll appreciate what it can potentially do, they just probably just don't think it's right for them, if that makes sense. So I think part of it's in the coach being able to highlight the relevance of it. And this is why sometimes I say to coaches in particular that when you're designing a practice, sometimes, and you've probably seen this as an analyst, certain players are probably more engaged in a practice than others. Now, that's not because they don't want to practice. That's probably because they don't see the value in that practice for them. So then it, therefore, in their eyes, it lacks relevance. But actually, without relevant, it could be anything. Like, right? if I'm a 5-year-old and everything's about having fun, well, just stick an iPad in front of me, I'm hooked, because I know I'm going to have fun on that iPad. But if you now are trying to get me to have fun, and you stick some books in front of me, I might not be that enthused, unless it's my favorite book, which then again creates its own relevance, right? So I guess I say that to say this, like, you know, from your perspective, have you seen there be times where the coach just maybe assumes, I know this is right for you, I know this is going to help you, therefore you must just accept that it's going to be right for you and it's going to help you. And actually, when you look at the situation and reflect, you think, actually, did the players really understand why that was going to be value for them? Does that make sense?
No, yeah, it does. Off the top of my head, I can't think firsthand if I've seen it per se, but I know exactly what you're saying. Obviously, you need to give them a reason to buy into what they're doing.
And it can't be conceptually though, because they can. If you speak to them on a conceptual level, they'll be like, "Yeah, I get that, but why me? Why? What's it got to do for me?"
Because you can obviously it's not specific, but kind of generally. Well, if you're doing I don't know, if your focus for that week is attacking, the defenders aren't, obviously they're engaging because they've still got to work, but because they're not maybe the highlight player or the highlight topic of that week, they, not that they don't turn up, but they do I feel like they can disassociate slightly. But I think that can also heavily depend on how old they are as well, because obviously the younger, I think it kind of goes, when they're younger, they're up for anything, they'll do anything because they don't understand what is necessarily relevant and not relevant. So they kind of just want to, oh my god, it's football, let's get involved, let's do this, do that. Obviously then you go to that teenage bit where obviously I'm kind of going to speak for more boys because I've worked with teenage like lads. They kind of do well, is it really relevant? Is it this? Is there any point? Like, why am I doing gym today? That makes no sense. I'm here for football. All like this. And then obviously I think once you hit that age of, well, you're getting your scholar or something like that, they go, oh, actually, I now understand things. So I think it's definitely that like YDP age bracket that definitely needs to be looked into. But I think it's one of those things like, they're all different. They're all going to have a relevance to different things. Yeah, you might have two centre-backs that are the exact same age at the exact same club, but their relevance to themselves will be different just because of the person they are outside of football. So, like, it's also how, like, you intervene in practices. Like, some people need just a one-to-one, just a quick, by the way, what do you think about doing this next time? Just a little side one, so no fuss has been made. But sometimes the other person might need it in front of everyone, and it just depends on the person. And I think that depends on the relevance as well. So you can try and make it relevant to everyone, but I feel like you need to, with certain
that's players, when it's become bespoke, them, right?
Yeah, you need to make it bespoke to each player. I definitely feel like there's always areas of improvement that every member of staff that is involved in the MDT of football. So it's definitely something to consider. But then again, like I said, it's an individual basis thing, really, or like a small set of groups basis when it comes to trying to get them to buy in to understand actually why.
100%. I think there is some value in what you said earlier in terms of, you know, that the whole thought process around, you can take them to the water, but you can't make them drink it. But I think the starting point is actually having the water available for them to drink from. So providing them with all the resources. And I really love the idea of, it's something I've used in the past, like just sharing your session plan. Before the session, I remember when I was working in academy football before, one of the academies I worked in, they were really big on the idea that we needed to have the session plan printed out. It needs to be on the wall for the players to see as they come in. Might only be one player out of 16 that looks at it, but that one player out of 16 looks at it might get some benefit from it. So give them the water and let them decide whether they're going to drink from it, right? Is the concept. But then equally, I think one of the biggest challenges now we've got, especially with younger players, and even more so, especially those that work in grassroots environments, is contact time. And I say, well, what is contact time? Contact time, it doesn't just have to be when we're sitting having a conversation, when we're actually in each other's presence. Well, no, contact time could maybe be me printing stuff, or me putting this document together or this visual together, and you just go and look at it in your own time. That's still contact time, right? But it's how intentional are you about what that contact time looks like when they're not in person or face-to-face, right? So like you said about sharing the session plans, is there concepts around that? Is there, if it's not the session plan or the practice itself, is it actually, here's some questions I want you to think about in preparation for tomorrow's session. Here's some considerations I want you to explore ahead of the game on the weekend or whatever. Here's, you know, it might be just even revisiting the fact that, okay, they've all got individual development plans, whether in whatever environment you're working in. It might just be a case of, actually, here's everyone's individual development plans. have another look at them before we get to match day and see what we can drag out from that on match day. It's just some form of action, right, which is trying to support the players in what they're trying to achieve, whether that be on training or match day, and giving them other ways to do that. But even if you're fortunate enough to have someone like yourself working with them and getting clips of footage of what's gone well, what hasn't gone well, or worst case, do you know what? I've seen this clip off YouTube and it really reminded me of something that we did last week, and I really want us to focus on this. It could be anything, right? Any sort of resource is what we're going after. But it's about highlighting the relevance. And I think saying, you know, listening to what you said a second ago, it's really about understanding the individual and what type of interaction that individual might need. So I know, as an example, like you probably observed this firsthand in academy environments or in the environments that you've worked in, right? Is if you ask me to do something, I don't care how important it is, if you can't help me understand the importance of it, I'm not going to do it. Because, yeah. And not in a negative way necessarily, but I would say to a certain extent, I'm a bit of a lazy individual. I'm not doing anything if I can't see the benefit in it. And even if there's a benefit in it, the benefit has to be of real value for me, otherwise I ain't going to do it. It's just not going to happen. You can convince me till the cows come home. I ain't going to do it unless I can see it. Now, I don't have to agree that this is the way things should be done. But if you can't help me see the value in doing it, I ain't going to do it. And you'll get players like that. And I say to coaches sometimes, because even when I'm delivering coach education, sometimes, oh, yeah, you're being difficult. I'm not being difficult. I'm just giving you the reality of what some players might actually be like. Unfortunately, we're in a time where sometimes we want, especially when we're working with young players in particular, we want to kind of go back to the old ages a little bit sometimes when it's convenient for us. And what I mean by that is 15, 20, 30 years ago, it was the coach says, player does. That was the mentality. That was the society. That was the world that we lived in. Times have changed to the point where we want players to take more ownership, but we want them to take ownership on our terms, which means when they challenge what we do, we don't want to hear that. But you said you wanted to take ownership. So, like, which one do you want, right? And I think sometimes coaches have to be comfortable being challenged by the players. I don't know what your thoughts are on that.
No, definitely. Like I mentioned a bit earlier, obviously, if you asked me 10 years ago, about coaches, obviously their mindset of things are very, very different. It's like it's my way or the highway. So I definitely feel like it's something that's been brought into. I haven't necessarily seen it, not saying it doesn't happen, but I haven't really seen it firsthand in regards to players challenging coaches. But I've definitely seen it from a multidisciplinary team side of things, of like an analyst like myself being able to go to a coach and going, hang on, I'm not sure about this. Here's right. Why. Same
you've,
with like
you've been the difficult one, haven't you?
I have been a difficult one. I remember we had a bit of a coaching restructure this season at Palace, and the coach came in, a great coach, absolutely loved working with him. He came in and was like, I want to do this, and I went, that's fine. I think this though, I was like, I've worked with them for the past 6 months. I was like, I'm not saying that I know them perfectly, but I was like, I don't think that's going to work. I'm not sure about this. And obviously he took everything on board and he went, right, okay, we'll convene next week and we'll start again. And he took what I had to say on board, especially, which I thought was fantastic. Bear in mind, I've never actually really worked with him before. Like I did the odd thing here and there for him, but I've never actually worked with him like full time. So it was actually so nice to him to buy in to me and like accept my challenge and not go, you have no idea what you're talking about. So it was nice to have that side of things and let me take my ownership of my department and go, this is the raw data. This is the facts. This is what I think on a personal level as well. And he took it on board. I think that's just as important as when a player going, hold on, coach, I actually don't think that's going to work, or I don't think this, I don't think that, or whatnot. I think it's just as important, because at the end of the day, people aren't challenging you to spite you and to be mean and to tell you you're not good enough. They're doing it to better you. Obviously, at the time, don't get me wrong, if someone turns around to me and goes, actually, Jamie, you know what? Don't like that, whatever. Obviously, at the time, I'm like, well, okay, whatever. I'm like, great, that's not good enough. But then when you take a step back and you actually go, well, they're actually just trying to help me. And I think that's, the coaches are trying to help the players, but I think by the players helping the coach, it's going to then become a loop of, like, we've got respect for each other, and it's just going to keep growing and growing and growing until the team's better, the coach is better at coaching, which at the end of the day is the most important thing. Because if you haven't got a good coach, you can't coach the players to then be the best they are, whether that is all the way down from grassroots to first team, men's, women's football, looking at England and whatnot like that. I think it's so important to have that challenge, but you've got to realise that it's constructive feedback, not an attack. And I think that's something that everyone, no matter if you're a coach and this player, I think everyone is slowly getting better at understanding and figuring out.
Do you not think at the same time it's left more, it's maybe created a bit more uncertainty around what people should do sometimes?
Possibly, but I don't necessarily think that's a bad thing.
Right.
Because nothing's ever certain. Like, you could go into a game, like, look at this season just gone, like, Premier League wise, Southampton, Man City, for example. Southampton could still win the game. There's so much uncertainty. Obviously, I know they had a bit of a bad season, but that doesn't mean that they couldn't come out and win the game. And I think that's kind of the beauty of football. You never know what's going to happen. You could have had the best training week ever. Everything went to plan. As soon as the game comes, the game's gone. Like, it's just a bad game. And I think that, obviously, it's frustrating if that happens. But I think that's kind of the world we live in. I've got this pathway in mind of where I'm going to get by the age of 30, where I'm going to get by the age of 40. That's my path and my dream of where I want to go. But that doesn't mean it's a plan. That doesn't mean I'm going to end up there. It could completely change. It doesn't mean that I'm going to get there overnight. There's so much uncertainty in everything that I think is actually kind of quite beautiful, actually. So I think we should embrace the uncertainty and try new things. That's why I think football is ever evolving, because you are trying new things. Don't get me wrong, like, things are recycled as years go on, like, oh, pressing's the new big thing, or a low block's the new big thing. But it's just the new big thing in the past 5 years, because it's happened before.
Often what happens is it's just been regurgitated from another time in the past, right? It's just been, like, I say that in football in particular, we very rarely are seeing something that we've never seen before.
Yeah,
it's just something that's almost been, it's been gone for a little while, to the point it's almost forgotten and then been brought back into existence, right? Because ultimately, there's this problem is the solution to this problem, and this approach is the problem to that approach, and vice versa. And it's just an ongoing cycle, and it's just about coming back on top. But linked to that, then, I guess, it reminds me of a phrase that I often use, and I say opposition is opportunity. And what I mean by that is that I agree with you. I think challenge and uncertainty is actually a really good thing. I don't know if I describe it as beautiful, but I guess I get what you mean. Because in actual fact, it's an opportunity for us to learn, right? And I say it's only going to teach us one or two things when we are challenged. It's either going to confirm further what we believe, or it's going to challenge us to think about whether what we believe is accurate. So I think there's actually a great value in us being able to kind of collaborate, challenge and critique one another's ideas. Not in a negative way, but fundamentally, if we're working in player development, if we're working in academy football and we're part of the MDT, well, fundamentally, we're all working towards the same goal. We're just coming at it from a different perspective, right? And if at the end of the day, we're helping players get better and then hopefully go on and develop careers in the game, well, everyone's had a part to play in that. Right. So it's just, and I remember when I first came into academy football, right, one of my first roles, I used to just sit there and I used to look around sometimes and I used to think, why is no one talking? Like, perception is one thing, and, you know, there's obviously different levels to it, but I've got all these people doing different roles, and all these people doing different roles who are probably considered experts in their field to an extent. why would you not want to collaborate? Like, it just never made sense to me. So, like, I remember at the time I was I was working as a coach across the YDP and the PDP doing goalkeeping and some outfield stuff. So I had a bit of a dual role. And it just never made sense to me how these people wouldn't collaborate. So then I started thinking, okay, well, what does the sports scientists want? What does the strength and conditioning coaches want for these players? What does so-and-so want for these players? Okay, brilliant. So that's what they want. I can see what they're going after now, but they don't have the lens that I've got in terms of what I'm looking from a player development standpoint. But surely if they understood that this is what they're going after, maybe we could get it to happen in a more specific way. So as an example, it might be that the strength and conditioning guys or the sports scientists guys, they wanted maybe to get some a bit more output from a physical loading standpoint. Okay, cool. Let's look at that then. But what does that look like in relation to actually being a goalkeeper? Because we can increase the physical load. But is it physical load, again, going back to what I said earlier, that's relevant to the goalkeeper? Or is it just physical load for the sake of physical load? Does that make sense? So now how do we make it more position specific? So like, for instance, you know, if it is around loading and if it is around certain movements and, you know, certain kind of, data points, well, are those data points relevant to the goalkeeper, or are they just relevant to an individual that is just going through a generic program around strength and conditioning? How do we align the two, you know, two together? So I think, and then again, from the analyst standpoint, well, the analyst is only trying to help develop the player, but does the analyst understand what you're looking for from a coaching standpoint? Because that's important, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 100%.
And because ultimately, and this is one of the challenges that comes with, I guess, player development in general, is, well, me and you might still want to develop the player, but what you see development as and what I see development as two completely different things. And I guess, even though we're working in the same environment, how you perceive development and even the language that's attached to it, or the metrics that we're looking to observe, well, you've still got your own perception of that. So if I now say, right, Jamie, go away and I want to get some clips on this stuff here, well, you might come back with what your perception of those clips are. So, you know, just talk about that a little bit in terms of managing that difference and that perception and ensuring that people are on the same track. Because I often say that, well, we don't have to agree on how things should be done, but what we do need to agree on is what we are doing.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
No, 100%. I think something that definitely is not always spoken about a lot is, obviously, it's great that we're getting all of these different people in a room, but sometimes there really is too many cooks in the kitchen. And that is something that is so difficult because there's so many areas of development that a player needs to go through, like nutrition. You need to make sure they're fueling correctly, their S&C, they need to be strong enough to play, their anything else to do with the sports science side of things, obviously their analysis side of it, of their technical and tactical understanding, obviously their coaching, their actual ability to be able to play the game. So obviously that's something that needs to be considered first, making sure you've got the right amount of people for that player. But also, I think making sure that that player doesn't hit burnout as well, because if you're like, right, you need to work on all of this, that just becomes so overwhelming. I think for everyone involved, even though you're only focusing on that one thing, but also the player themselves. But perspective wise, I think you can kind of group people together in my like thought process anyway. So kind of like, the best way I've described myself when I'm putting my job out there is like, yes, I'm a PA as in a performance analyst, but I feel like I'm a PA to a coach as more of a personal assistant. So see, I don't always like using that term, but that's, to me, best describes how I work and stuff like that, is I do my stuff and then I go to them and then I ask them what they need from this and that. And so I've got that good relationship there, but then I don't necessarily feel like I would need the relationship between S&C and coach, just because of, well, yes, there's a tie there. Yes, we do work together, but the perspectives that need to be understood more is between coach and S&C and things like that. So I think it's a case of what I've experienced the past year is, once a week we sit down as an MDT and we discuss everything as a group and make sure everyone's on the same wavelength. And then the next week we come back, we discuss what we've previously discussed and we discuss how to move forward. And each week we focus on, I think it's like 3 or 4 key players from each age group. So every player is getting the development they need. So everyone's perspective is being used. But I think your perspectives I needed more from different departments and different areas, if that makes sense.
And again, I'm just thinking, have you ever considered how you might look to collaborate with the other MD, the parts of the MDT? So putting the sports science, strength conditioning, or even the medical department as an example, from a perspective of performance analysis. Have you ever thought about that?
Yes, it's definitely more up and coming, and it's definitely more of a first team thing. I haven't really seen anything to do with it in an academy, just because I feel like it's very time consuming, and you might need like an extra body to help you with that side of things. But also, like, funding and software for it can be quite difficult, because there's things that looking into connecting GPS data with analysis and things like that. And I've seen, I had a workshop, or was at a workshop with someone from Huddle, and he was explaining all of this to me, and I was like, oh my god, this absolutely sounds fantastic. But then you need everything to align with each other and things like that. So once you've got the correct GPS, you've got the correct systems, and you've paid for Studio Elite and then the new Huddle, yeah, I don't remember what it's called.
Quite a setback.
It is a setback financially, yeah. Which is definitely something to consider. Like, for a grassroots, this definitely wouldn't be something, obviously, maybe for a Cat 1, maybe even a Cat 2, definitely something you could consider, obviously, once it's trickled down from first team. But the insight you can get from it is absolutely, absolutely crazy. Like, the GPS and, like, the XY coordinates of where you are on the pitch and everything like that. When you have the ability to do it, I think it can be so beneficial. But for like an academy or grassroots, I think sometimes it could be too much information, and then, like I said, financially it is something
that was
difficult.
My next question to you, because obviously we've seen just sport in general, it's been, you know, just, it's just taken off in so many different ways over the last kind of couple decades, right? Technology is just becoming even more into, you know, advanced, and all the stuff that we can get from, but there's definitely going to be people out there who are thinking there's too much technology in sport now. There's definitely going to be people out in there thinking, well, why do we need some of this information? Obviously, depending on the level that you're working at, depending on the environment you're working in, you know, some things might be more relevant for you than others. But do you ever consider, you know, in your role as an analyst, that have we just got too much data now?
From looking at some data sets that I've seen, it's crazy to look at, like, there, I think, from just one season worth of, I'm not sure exactly what it was, but there was like 17,000 rows of data. And I looked at that and I went, oh, okay, that's a lot. That's a lot of data to even, that's just there, let alone having to sift through it. But then you've got the argument is sometimes too much better is data than not enough. So I know when I'm coding a game or doing some analysis for a game, I know I always collect too much data, but I've always got that, well, what if the coach needs this? What if the coach needs that? So it's all, what I would say, it's all relevant and all can be used. Some of it is a little bit more ambiguous than others, but it's definitely still relevant. I think, like you said, it depends on what level you are. It depends... I think it depends on your gender as well, because I feel like there's more data that's relevant to women than there is to the men's side of things. Definitely looking more of the GPS and health side of data, specifically looking around like women's menstrual cycles and how they play and their injury risk levels, obviously, like with the ACLs and stuff like that compared to men. So I definitely feel like women need more data on that side of things than say the men do, just because obviously it's going to impact the game completely differently. But obviously coming from like an analysis, like my job wise, all the data in that regards is the same. You could give me a data set and I would have no clue if it's a men's team or a women's team. But obviously, so like I said, that was looking at more the science side, the physiological side of things. I don't think there's much more data we could look at though. So I think everything that we currently have, I mean, I could be proven wrong in a couple of years' time and there's something new come out. Sometimes I do think it can ruin a game, but sometimes I've been on both ends of it, of like VAR's gone my team's way and I'm like, oh brilliant, yes, it's gone the other way and I'm like, well, what's the point of VAR, like it's absolutely stupid. So I think there's definitely more technology that will come out and stuff like that, but I mean, I collect, like I said, I collect more data than I need, but for me, I'd rather have too much than not enough.
Okay, so let's just the kind of, you know, as we look to wind up, then, you know, there'll be coaches listening to this that, you know, fortunately are working in environments where they've got someone like yourself working with them and doing all those bits for them, and there'll be people like you listening to this thinking, yeah, that's great, but I've also got B Pro that I can send my stuff off to and get some data put together for me, but then there'll be people on the complete other end of the spectrum thinking, you know, I really like the idea of some of this analysis stuff, I've never really kind of stepped foot in seeing how I can implement it within my environment, I'm not really sure where to start. What would your advice be to those people there? Again, we spoke briefly about it earlier, but if there's a coach listening to this, that maybe, let's just say, again, I'll take this back to when I did my UEFA B as an example several years ago. We had a task on the UEFA B and it was around analysis. But we didn't have that. We didn't have the technology to do it with. So everyone was just tally charts, right? And I'm making myself sound old now, but Where would you encourage coaches to start if they want to just start by, you know, thinking, how can I just bring another dimension or another little bit of added value to what I'm doing with my players in my environment? Where would that start for you from a performance analysis standpoint or just a data capture standpoint?
I think obviously it definitely depends on your funding levels, to say the least, because obviously I know it sounds silly, but I still use a pen and paper at times. I know I've got access to all of this incredible software like Huddle Sport Code and all of this. There's still times I'm writing notes down and I'm tallying on there instead of using my laptop. So obviously if you don't have the funding for elaborate things like that, definitely just use your notebook, rewatch the game, tally how many times you got into the final third and things like that, just so you've got like an actual understanding of how the game's gone and not just your perception of it. Because obviously, as we said, like everyone's perception's different and what you remember from the game isn't necessarily what happened in the game. So that's somewhere to start. Things like trying to break into the industry of performance analysis, and it's definitely something that I am still navigating and trying to fully immerse myself and get myself into now that I've finished my master's. So my work with Columbia, that is all volunteer basis. So if you could find a master's student or an undergrad student to offer them the opportunity to come do it for you, I think that would be absolutely fantastic in just getting more and more people involved in the industry, because it's hard enough to get into as it is. Even if they don't have the software or something like that, they might have something with their uni or anything like that. Get other people involved, especially if it's not your specialty, because then if it's something like a placement or an undergrad student, you can learn together, which is always a benefit. And in turn, it's going to help you out and it's going to help them out. So it's kind of like the perfect relationship. But like I said from earlier, if you have got the ability to use some form of software or use a VO to create clips form and stuff like that, I would definitely consider team-based stuff and maybe focus on the goalie.
Mm. That's really, really positive. Just on that, you know, one of the key things you've talked about there and really emphasized on it is budgeting challenges. Are you aware of any things that coaches could maybe utilize or people listen to utilize that might just be very low cost or even free in terms of apps? It might even be things that they can just access for limited time.
Oh God, honestly, I'm not 100% sure. Obviously, like I said, I've been in positions luckily where I've had the softwares ready and easily for me to use. But I think like on some of them, you can get like free trials and stuff like that. So that's definitely something to look into. But obviously, if you've got access to like the VOs and stuff like that, I know they are expensive. They're one of like the cheaper end side of things, or like a Huddle Flex or something like that. They have, as part of it, they've come with like a basic package. Mm-hmm. So on like a VO, you can still clip and you can make notes and stuff like that on it. It's not as advanced, but you can still download the clips individually and things like that. So there's still ways to access things on more of a budget-friendly side of things.
I think something's better than nothing, right?
Exactly.
As long as it's intentional. But look, Jamie, it's been a real pleasure to catch up with you. I really appreciate your time, and hopefully you've enjoyed the conversation as much as I have.
Oh no, it's been fantastic. I love hearing it from different perspectives, especially a coach.
Awesome. Thank you very much for your time, Jamie.
Thank you so much.
Well, there you have it, guys. Another episode of the Coaches Network podcast, where our aim is to bring the world of athlete, talent and personal development together to just one platform. And you can help us with that mission right now by sharing this episode or any of your favorite episodes with everyone that you can think of. You can tag us in those mentions as well on Instagram at the Coaches Network or on Twitter at the Coaches Net. We look forward to hearing from you. Let us know what you thought about today's episode. And until next time, guys, take care.
Big news! Wayfair's biggest sale of the season is here. It's Black Friday in July. Right now, score up to 80% off everything home at Wayfair. Get our lowest prices of the summer for 5 days only. Plus, amazing doorbuster deals and 24-hour surprise flash deals with fast and free shipping site-wide. So don't wait. Head to Wayfair.com today to score up to 80% off now through July 28th.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same Game Parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets, like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio.
T&Cs apply.